Thanks for joining A&M Conversation With, a podcast series featuring Alvarez and Marsal leaders discussing the trends impacting businesses today.
On this episode of A&M Conversation With, Senior Director Art Hall sits down with Jill Marie Harding, a Managing Director in our Tax and Practice, in this two-part series to discuss tax reform. In part two, they will discuss tax reform and pending M&A activity.
Welcome to another edition of A&M Conversation With, the Supply Chain Edition. I am your host, Art Hall. M&A activity is hot right now, but how will the new tax reform impact it? It's a pleasure to bring back my guest, Jill Marie Harding. Jill is the Managing Director in our tax practice out in San Francisco. Jill, welcome back.
Can you help us understand how the new tax reform could impact pending M&A activity in the U.S. and what the potential consequences of that activity would be?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, folks may have seen from this latest round of earnings releases, as it is earnings season, that many, many companies in the technology space, pharma space, and other industries have all been reporting out rather large additional tax bills associated with a change in the tax law that is now taxing previously untaxed foreign earnings. So if we think about industries where there's significant operations and intangibles offshore, where over time, you know, earnings accumulated quite substantially and war chests of money were accumulating quite substantially overseas, all those earnings through 2017 are subject to U.S. taxation. And it's a one-time toll charge, if you will, and it can be paid over a period of 8 years, but the toll charge is in effect as of 12/31/17. Why that's relevant to M&A activity is that companies are likely, and we've seen various different press releases from, you know, companies such as Apple and eBay and the like, that they are having significant toll charges related to this tax reform. And as a consequence of that, there is an intent to bring back these large war chests of cash that are sitting offshore. Given the volume of cash that is expected to come back from overseas, which was the intent of the U.S. government imposing this new tax law change, one might expect an uptick in M&A activity here in the U.S. By U.S. multinationals, because they now have extra funding on hand that previously was trapped offshore overseas. So you might see an ever increase in the M&A activity from a corporate perspective. Another change to the tax law that could impact M&A, not the volume of deals, but perhaps the pricing of deals, was a negative impact, that being an interest limitation cap that was imposed to the extent a corporation has any debt, whether related party or unrelated party, on the books. Interest can only be deducted, net interest, it can only be deducted to the extent it does not exceed, as a proxy, 30% of EBITDA until 2022, and then 30% of EBIT. So financial buyers, venture capitalists, private equity firms, who typically source the funding of acquisitions through significant leverage, may be impacted not in the volume of deals they would do, but in the valuation of the deals in terms of how much debt they can actually load onto a company without otherwise having long-term negative impacts associated with lack of interest deduction. So I think from an M&A perspective, the markets are still trending to be strong. I think there's going to be a mix of more corporate M&A activity and perhaps more price competitiveness between financial buyers and corporate buyers, and perhaps a change in the debt markets in terms of the amount of debt funding or the nature of debt funding coming into deals.
There's a provision in our new tax reform called GILTI. That's Global Intangible Low Taxed Income. Jill, how does this come into play with respect to not only the new tax reform, but why supply chain executives should be thinking about this?
Yeah, so you're right. The acronym is GILTI. And although it is a little bit of a misnomer because it suggests that there's intangible low tax income and then one must figure out what is the intangible income, the way the law is written is it presupposes that the vast majority of any income generated by a foreign affiliate is going to be intangible income. And how it does that is by simply stating that the gross income of a foreign affiliate is going to be treated as tangible income to the extent of basically some adjusted basis in the assets of the of that company. So for companies that don't have a lot of property, plant, and equipment that are very capital intensive, if companies are software-based companies, pharma-based companies, etc., the vast majority of income, even if that income is just capped at a limited margin because it's a service provider within the supply chain function, even a manufacturing facility or testing facility overseas, a lion's share of that company's income is likely to qualify as GILTI income. And what that does is that GILTI income, even though it's earned by the foreign subsidiary, it's treated as includable into the taxable income of the U.S. parent company each year. So the impact on supply chain is likely going to be one where companies may be looking at strategically where they've got functions, service-based functions, or even manufacturing-based functions, and considering whether there'll be additional tax as a result of these limited earnings of these foreign subsidiaries. The tax can be offset to the extent there are local country taxes paid, but the tax needs to be at least greater than 13% on a local country basis to have a full offsetting effect in the U.S. So what that means is if a company from a supply chain perspective is looking to set up a new manufacturing facility or R&D shop or other service-based facility overseas that will be captive to the U.S. group, consideration may be given to not necessarily finding the lowest tax jurisdiction within, say, Europe, but perhaps a moderate taxing jurisdiction within Europe to allow there not to be any additional U.S. taxation associated with the supply chain overseas. From a big picture perspective, from what should supply chain executives really be focused on, it's really focusing on two to three things. The first is looking at your capital expenditures for improvements and retrofits and updates to an internal supply chain, and really focusing on the timing of those because of this finite window of time for 100% capital expensing. So evaluating, does it make sense to invest in that plant in an earlier year to take advantage of this limited time window for the tax deductions? That's on capital expenditures. The other thing to really be mindful is the space erosion anti-abuse tax. It has far-reaching impacts and could have significant impacts on potential changes to supply chain, which, you know, are not always easy to make and to make quickly. So if there's a design or redesign to a supply chain that's being considered, it is critical to think of these two concepts right away. And then also, but, you know, a slightly lower down in the priority would be this GILTI, as well as the net interest deduction caps that I spoke of, to the extent that financing is required to do any kind of upgrades or retrofits of supply chains, then strong consideration needs to be given as to how that is financed and where, meaning what country it's financed through, to ensure that there's not unintended negative tax consequences.
Jill Harding is a managing director in our tax practice in San Francisco. Jill, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
For our listeners, for more information, visit our homepage at alvarezandmarsal.com and connect with us on LinkedIn at Alvarez and Marsal.